Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Blue Half Podcast, episode 6. Figured that after the horror show, Stamford Bridge on Sunday, we needed to do what we could to raise the spirits of the fan base. And so we come up with the idea, it's quite timely, St. Patrick's Day is next week, that we do an Irish special. So I've got three guys with me today. First two now are from the Winslow Hotel, David Bond. David, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Roger. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Under the circumstances, just coming back to normality. And, of course, we've got the chairman of the Irish Toffees, none other than Joe O'Reilly. Joe, good afternoon, mate.
Hi, Roger. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing all right. What I normally do with each guest is just to ask them, so I want to come to you first, Dave, is how on earth you became an Evertonian. So tell us, could you please?
Okay, well, that goes right back to 1976-77 season. That would be that run to the Old League Cup. We went to three games against Villa. And I had just started to develop an interest in football. And back in those days, we were limited to what was on TV. You know, it was a match of the day and the FA Cup final and the European Cup final and that kind of stuff. And I was one afternoon, I was up in the loft with my mum, and there was an old radio up there. And I looked at it and I saw Radio Merseyside on it. I said, oh, geez. And I just started getting an interest in Everton, you know, watching a match of the day and that. But I hadn't gone knee deep in it, so to speak. But anyway, long story short, that radio was my pathway to many rainy nights at Goodison that season. And it was barely audible. You really had to put your ear to it, and you could just barely make out the commentary. So for me, as a young boy of 9, that was my starting point. And then I just went full on with the collecting the scrapbooks. And, you know, I mean, we were limited with what we could see on TV and that. And my first game then would have been, I would have traveled over 7 years later, 83, to the Mill Cup final at Wembley against our lovely neighbours.
Lovely, so, yes. That was a good first game in that it was at Wembley, but didn't end happening.
No, it didn't. No. And I remember like it was yesterday, because I got a coach from Dublin, and I was the only blue in the bus.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because you were growing up in Dublin, right?
I grew up in the west of Ireland, County Clare. But like that, yeah, it's a similar situation. You remember the old kit bags you used to use as school bags back in the day? You know, you have the Gola ones and Adidas. And all, you know, you could tell, you look around, all the kids, they all had Leeds United, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal. No one had, you couldn't even get an Everton kit bag. So, yeah, I was the only one in the whole town to support Everton. I think there's two guys back there now, you know what I mean? It hasn't really progressed that much. But, yeah, nobody supported Everton back in the day. Nobody.
Yeah, and
down where I am anyway, you know, where Joe's up in the city, it'd be a little bit different, you know.
Okay, that's a good start. We'll come on to how you ended up at the Winslow Hotel in a minute, but Joe, how did you become a Blue, mate?
I'm very similar to David. It was in around the 76-77. Again, you wouldn't get much football on TV over here. It was the big match, our match of the day. It got the odd live game, but they would only be like cup finals and stuff like that. But two words, Bob Latford.
Okay.
He was a real life rider overs for me. He was just a different class. Real number 9.
Good in the air. Away to QPR, first, second game of the season in the late 70s, I remember.
My dad took me off to my first game was at Stamford Bridge in 1977, Chelsea and Blackpool.
Okay.
My first Everton game was 1978, played QPR. And I cried because Bob Latchford was out injured. I didn't get to see him that day. I actually met Bob a couple of times since. But he was just the perfect number 9. Good in the air, good with his feet, run through a brick wall.
Yeah, good left foot. He had a very good left foot, Bob Latchford, as I recall.
You had. A lot of people didn't give him credit for it. He was mostly a header, but he was great with both feet.
Yeah. So you're both growing up in Ireland, and you're in the minority as a Blue. How did you, you know, you must have been very tenacious to stick with the Toffees in the in the late 70s when things weren't going particularly well. Not that they're going brilliantly now, you understand, but were you not under pressure from your mates at school to change allegiance?
Big time, and still are in work. It really is just a love. It's crazy. Yeah. But like David said back then, there was no Everton. Like, you could get Man City stuff, you get Leeds stuff. Obviously, Leeds were big in the 70s. But yeah, you just could not get any Everton bags, yeah, scarves, nothing. You had to get them when you went to England.
Yeah,
but you know the old adage, Roger, you can change your wife, you can change your car, but you can never change your football team.
100%. I've done both of those things, but I haven't changed my football team.
There you go.
What I'm interested to now, let's fast forward. It's 2020, Joe, and I saw, and you guys and Dave, you helped them as well, because a couple of episodes ago I was talking to Alex from the American Toffee podcast, and they've just completed their tour, and you told them a few people. I don't know whether did you see them in Dublin, Joe, yourself?
I did. I met them on the Friday. They arrived here.
And then you saw them at the game as well.
I did.
Now that's blocks. Fantastic, bringing that whole Everton family together. I think it's wonderful. Tell me just a little bit, Joe, about the Irish Toffees group, because later I'm going to be talking to Phil from the Cork Toffees. Tell me about the Irish Toffees and how that came to be, and how you came to be chairman, and how the club helps you as a group.
Yeah, well, we officially started in 1992.
Right.
A few guys had known each other, obviously, previous years. But a late chairman, Jim Kearney, called a meeting, and six people turned up. He put an ad in the Kildare paper called the Leinster Leader, and six people turned up for that first meeting. And it basically grew from there. There was and still is a Dublin supporters club.
Yeah.
But Jim's idea was to start a club for people outside Dublin, across the country.
Yeah.
So this is where the Irish Toffees came about. And again, it started off from six people and grew and grew and grew, and we're up to 411 at the moment, with members from all parts of Ireland.
And you organise travel, do you? Do you get tickets from the club? You're an official supporters club. How does the club work with you?
Yeah, we're an official affiliated club. There's I think there's six or seven around the country, but we get tickets for most home games, nearly all home games, some away depending on the new credit system that they've installed.
Yeah.
But Everton have been really helpful in helping not just ourselves but other clubs grow outside of the UK.
Yeah.
So we run trips over. Like I said, we have members at every home and away game. But we do three main trips a year. First game, last game, and then we have an upcoming Junior Blues trip where it's just basically all just for the kids, whole weekend.
That's great. And do the club, am I right in thinking that the club come over or send people over to see you guys? I mean, maybe it was the Cork group where Neville came over and spent some time with them, or an event. Is that right?
Yeah, we had Dave Watson over just recently, about five, six weeks ago.
Great.
Dave Watson and Graham Stewart and Darren Griffiths come over, and we watched the West Ham away game in the Woolshed in Dublin City.
Oh, and wonderful.
And then we had a Q&A with Dave afterwards, which was a great night.
Wonderful. Let's just talk about in terms of other supporters clubs then, and other clubs, because we're talking back in the 70s, you know, when you were there, it was all Leeds this, Man United that.
Yeah.
And nowadays, we are in 2020, we've got a supporters club in Ireland, but, you know, we ain't won anything for a long period of time. Mm. And there's a few other clubs about to win things. What are the numbers like, you know, for, would you say, United and maybe, I'm guessing, Arsenal and the shower from across the park? Do they have a bigger support base in Ireland, would you say, Joe?
Yeah, huge. The three main teams in Ireland would be Manchester United, Liverpool, and, of course, Celtic.
Well, yes.
But you have again, with the modern technology now, you can watch a game anywhere. You can watch it on your phone. But there's City now, Chelsea. Actually, there's still a very, very strong Leeds support in Ireland. Always has been.
Yeah. Leeds had some good Irish players. Donny Giles and the like would have cemented that, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. In the early 70s, Leeds were a fantastic team.
Yeah. And I've talked a lot to, you know, people like Ped and Baz on Toffee TV about, you know, we didn't make enough use of Tim Howard when we had him. I want to come to you on this, Dave, that, you know, we've only just got Stephen Pienaar working for us in South Africa, Timmy Cahill to expand the base into Australia. And, you know, we've had the captain of Ireland as the captain of Everton. Dave, do you think we've done enough with Seamus to extend the reach of Everton across the Irish Sea?
Probably not. I mean, Joe would be well in a better position to answer this than me. I can give you my thoughts on like the guys who travel over from Ireland to Winslow. I mean, I feel that the club can do more for all the international fan groups. You know, I mean, sure, Seamus is a great ambassador. I mean, for club and country, you know, he's never let us down. You know, okay, people can slag him off a little bit in last time because he's lost that, he's lost a little bit of fitness. He's getting on. He's had that horrific injury. But, you know, I mean, I think, and obviously I'm wearing my green hat when I say this a little bit, but I think there's no better ultimate professional than that man. You know what I mean? He's just so humble and so grounded that he on his own could be a great ambassador for the club at some point. You know what I mean? But as regards with the question you asked me, have the club done enough? No, the short answer is I don't think they have.
No, I think you make a great point about Seamus. You know, the song says it all, 60 grand, Seamus Coleman. He has been a wonderful ambassador for the club and for country. You know, he's such a wholehearted player. Yes, he may have lost a yard of pace and he may not have the silky skills of some of the other darling fullbacks that the media love, but he's a fantastic example to, kids growing up in Ireland, Joe, would they aspire to be, you know, is somebody like Seamus a role model for them that would make them support Everton?
Absolutely. I mean, people seem to forget, Roger, that this chap had his leg snapped in half.
Absolutely.
I mean, Seamus is as solid as a rock. All right, granted, he's lost that yard of pace, but it was a horrific injury. Just to get back on the pitch is an immense achievement. Let alone playing. And I think Seamus sometimes gets a raw deal because he doesn't get that much help from the player who was in front of him. Sometimes Walker, sometimes Sidibe. Like they don't back up his lack of pace by helping him out. But as far as what Dave said, ambassador role, Seamus would be the perfect fit. An absolute gentleman. He would not meet a nicer bloke.
If I could, sorry, if I could just add to that a little tidbit of a little story here about Seamus and how he ended up at Everton. I don't know if more people know this, but Seamus was underage Gaelic football. He played for Donegal Intercounty, so he had, and he was about 17 at this point, so he was playing for his county under 18 football, and he had training with the intercounty team the same night, scheduled training as he was playing with St. Mary's, I believe, was the junior team in Killybegs. And they had a pre-season friendly against Sligo Rovers. And it clashed. And he was told by the GAA officials that if he went and played that match, that he would lose. He would never play intercounty football again. And he went and played the friendly for St. Mary's at fullback. And he got man of the match. And that put him in the window with Sligo Rovers. They signed him on his performance that night. And then after one season with Sligo Rovers, he ended up over Goodison. So had he decided to go playing GAA that night or go in training, he might never have gone to Everton.
Fascinating. It's great that you bring Seamus up, not just because we're talking about, you know, Irish toffees and the links between the football club and Ireland. But, you know, I know you don't want to. And I know I said we wanted to raise the spirits, but we have to do a little bit of chat about last Sunday. And, you know, Seamus didn't play last Sunday, right? Joe, what on earth do you make of that abject, you know, surrender.
It was horrific. It reminded me of another game, 3-0 away to Middlesbrough under Walter Smith.
Yes. So
it was nobody played well. One player. Pickford pulled off a couple of good saves. But it was just horrific. I think Sidibe, that was his worst game since he's come to the, it was just a horror show.
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing. The head's dropped. To see that, it's just, you don't mind losing, but to give up and not put in the effort, or there's no intensity. It was just a horror show from start to finish. And it was too easy for Chelsea. They didn't have to do much to win 4-0, to be honest.
I think it was a bit like someone rewound the tape to Marco Silva 3 months ago. That was just what reminded me of a performance from 3 months back. Like Joe said, there was no heart, there was no commitment. No one turned up. Nobody. You couldn't pick a positive out of anybody that day. Maybe Pickford pulled off a few saves. Okay, fair enough, yeah. But he still let in four, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it took me back to a 4-0 away to Tottenham under Allardyce, I think. It took me to a 4-1 away at Southampton, and I'm a Jonah with away games, but I get to see us play on the South Coast and in London, and we have a pretty rubbish record there. Until this season, I did see us win at Southampton. But what I mean by that, it was the forget that we didn't play well, because, you know, professionals can have a bad game. But when you're not playing well and passes aren't coming off or the ball control isn't what you might want it to be, then you have to put in effort to compensate for that. And there was so little effort. And I've seen so little effort from certain players in particular. And when the player that seems to be trying least hard of all is our captain, then boy, we have problems. And do you think
that's where the mistake comes from? To be honest, he's trying to shoehorn Sigurdsson into a team where there's no real place for him. He's just totally, totally out of form. He's tried him on the left. He's tried him on the right. It's just not working. And when I see him with the armband, I just can't believe it. It's just, he must be doing something in training that nobody has seen, but he's not doing it on the pitch.
No, he's not. And people will know that I'm a big fan of Carlo Ancelotti's. I wouldn't question him. He's got a fantastic track record. But I cannot understand how a football coach with his illustrious background can't see that Sigurdsson is not worthy of a place in that team, let alone as the captain. But he's not the only one. I mean, let's be fair. He's not the only one. What can we do? What do you think we can do to turn this around? You know, we've got a game, you know, COVID-19 permitting, and who knows what could happen from one day to the next with that. But eventually we will have to play Liverpool. What can we do, Dave? You know, you're there now. You're in the city, and I'd like to I'm going to ask you a bit about the Winslow in a little while. But, you know, you're there in the city, and that potential night on coming up Monday. What's the atmosphere going to be like pre-match in the boozer, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think a lot's going to depend on you just mentioned COVID-19. Let's see what happens if there's any fixtures cancelled. Okay, Arsenal was cancelled tonight against City, because of that connection with the Olympiacos owner. But anyway, if all the games go ahead at the weekend and City say, what is it, 6 points? But if City lose to Burnley, if that was to happen, then they need to beat us on Monday night to win the title.
Correct.
That's still possible. So that, I think if that's the case, that could have a little bit of a bad element in the atmosphere prior, you know. So I'm hoping, obviously, myself, that City at least get 1 point out of that, so it won't be decided on Monday night, you know. But they're going to, obviously, we all know that they're going to get it eventually, you know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, if you want to have a little minute or two about this coronavirus, I mean, there is potential that the rest of the season could be played out behind closed doors. You know, maybe after this block of fixtures this weekend going forward, we might see that a week from now, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, what can we do on the pitch? We can only do what we can on the pitch. We can only go out and try and win every game we play, you know. But what you said in the last section there about, you know, the last performance against Chelsea, I'd like to see Holgate in the middle of the park with Gomez. You know, I think we have to try and, he's playing at centre back. I think he's better utilised. And purely, we there's a massive void there. We don't have decent central midfielders at the moment. Okay, when Gomez is up to speed after that injury, sure. But everyone else is just subpar, you know. I don't know who you put in there, you know.
Anthony Gordon in? I think, you know, bring Anthony Gordon in. Fresh pair of legs, fresh ideas, good positive attitude. Can't be any worse than the overpaid guys playing currently.
Definitely. And the proof is in what Frank Lampard has done at Chelsea. His hand was called by not being able to dip into the transfer market. So he had to use the younger players, the under-23s. And we, in theory, have a better under-23 squad than Chelsea. But look what he's unearthed. Gilmore and a couple of more there, you know, they're unbelievable. So, you know, why not? Why not go in there, you know? You'll never know unless you try, you know?
And Joe, who would you give the armband to? Because surely you can't keep it with the Icelandic ghost, can he?
Is anyone there? Well, apart if Seamus plays, he gets the armband straight away. But I don't think there's any standout. Maybe Mina. I don't think there's a standout candidate for the captaincy.
It's just Holgate?
Possibly. I just think maybe Ancelotti is giving all the likes of Sigurdsson and Tom Davis, giving them, listen, this is your chance. They've not taken it.
No, they patently haven't taken it.
I think there'll be a lot of people in the summer leaving Goodison, be it on loan or on a permanent. Sidibe, again, he's only on loan. I can't see him coming on a permanent deal. They might take John Joe Kenny back.
Oh, yeah.
Come back. I don't know. So, like the turnaround from when Duncan took over through Christmas, all the optimism has just disappeared after one game. It's just depressing. Really is.
And
if they play anywhere near, like we did on Sunday against Liverpool, the fans will just leave. They won't stand and watch that. They'll walk out of the ground.
No, it could turn very ugly. And I don't want to be stereotypical or in any way patronising here, but let's just bring it back to the Irish national football team. And what that's been known for historically has been a team that is greater than the sum of the parts, you know, whether it was under Big Jack or Mick McCarthy or whoever. That ethos, that team spirit has always been very prevalent with the boys in green. And it's such a stark contrast between what we see from the boys in blue right now. I just wondered if you know, if that strikes you as well, Dave. No pride in the jersey, no sense of togetherness, individuals not pulling for the common cause.
Look, I think that's been the case for a long time. It's not just with Everton, but let's just focus on Everton. Yeah, I think it's modern day footballers. I mean, you mentioned Ireland there, right? And that is very true. That ethos was very true, obviously, under Big Jack. You know, I don't think this is true anymore in you know, under Martin O'Neill, and that, you know, we're not blaming Martin O'Neill in particular, but I think it's this age, this era, this modern day footballer. They're a different animal than they were 15, 20 years ago, you know. You know, money's a lot to do with it. They're pampered, you know. They don't have the work ethic that the older guys had when they were playing, you know, 15, 20 years ago or more. There's so much money in the game now. There's so many factors you could talk on for that reason. But I just think the bottom line is that they're pampered too much, and they play for the name rather than the badge. You know, they're playing for themselves, their career. You know what I mean? You know yourself, back in the 80s, I mean, it was such a different thing. I mean, your footballer was on a decent money, you know, but he weren't on groundbreaking money, you know, but they were relying on clean sheet bonuses, win bonuses, attendance bonuses. You know, they were relying on those at the end of the season for their holidays and maybe, you know, to buy a second property or whatever, you know, make a little investment for themselves. They don't care about it. So you see that when guys will track back, you'll be 3-0 up and you track back not to concede that goal 3-1. You don't get that now. There's no graft, you know?
Mm.
The saunter around the pitch. You mentioned, I don't want to pick on one player, but it was a certain player who played against Chelsea last week, and he didn't touch the ball in the first half, and he was wearing the captain's armband.
And that comes back to support, you know. So we're looking at kids, and we're trying to generate more support and a broader global support. I guess what you're saying there, Dave, is that it's now the cult of the player and the personality. So whether it's Cristiano Ronaldo, whether it's Mo Salah, whether it's, you know, and we don't have one of those inspirational players, and nor could we attract support like perhaps a Sheffield United might at the moment, because, or Wolves might, because they're punching above their weight. Joe, what do you think?
I think it goes back to the point we made earlier. If you don't see a lack of effort from the players, it just puts you off.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be a given that the minute you step on the pitch, you give 100%, and that's the bare minimum.
Yeah.
But there's just too many players there. A player that frustrates me so much is Tom Davis.
Yeah.
He just strolls around as if he has all day long to play the ball, and he just doesn't have the time, but he never tracks back. I mean, two of the goals on Sunday, the players like Mason Mount for the first goal, I think he went past Davis twice. It was just so slow, pedestrian. So yeah. It's just a lack of effort against me, which should be a given from the start.
Let me ask you, what do you think about? I mean, it's so Everton, because we do peaks and troughs almost like no other club. Only our peaks aren't really as high. But the week before the Chelsea game, we gave out two new contracts, deservedly, because they'd been probably the two best players of the season, to Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Mason Holgate. But I questioned the timing of doing that, because, you know, I don't say they shouldn't have contract extensions, but you hand them out, and neither of them had particularly good games against Chelsea. And did we do it a bit too soon? What, Dave, do you think that was needed in the middle of the season, 10 games to go and Europe still on the line, to give them such a generous reward?
No, I don't. You hit the nail on the head. How many times have we seen it before? You know, you see it with all players and even some managers. You know, you give them, you know, we get a player on loan, and then when he plays out of his skin, and then when you give him that contract, he disappears, you know.
Yeah.
We've seen it with numerous players. Yeah, I think they should have waited. They could have waited until the end of the season, you know. I mean, I know there was an immediate talk, you know, a couple of clubs sniffing around Calvert-Lewin and I suppose Mason Holgate as well. But look, the club could have pulled them to the side and you know, could have whispered in their ear, look, we're going to give you a very good, decent contract. Give me a look at it and say, we'll do this at the end of the season publicly, but this is yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair play. Right, let's lighten the mood, because we got stuck in the morass there of Chelsea. Apologies. Dave, how on earth did you come to be running the Winslow, mate?
Oh, man, this is a long story, but I'm definitely going to give you the short version of it. it basically goes back to 2007. I've been in the Winslow probably twice or three times over the years, you know what I mean? I'd go over for a game or whatever. I lived in Germany for many years, so I popped over for a couple of games, and I stood in the Winslow a couple of times. Wasn't that familiar with it, you know. I had a pint there, went to the game, and that was it, really. In 2007 we were drawn against Nuremberg, if you remember, in Europe, and I was living in Germany, so I was helping out a lot of guys online, getting them tickets in the German section, because I was using a German IP address, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I could get a block of tickets there, no worries. So yeah. On my way down to the game on the train, I was going to Dusseldorf, Cologne Airport, then down to the south of Germany to Nuremberg. And I was on my own, and these four guys got on it. Joel know what I'm talking about in a second. These four guys got on the train at Cologne Airport. And sat across from me, and I knew straight away they were Irish lads, and they were wearing Irish toffees tops, you know. I was going, here, I'll have a laugh with these guys. So I acknowledged, and we sat down. I had a few beers in a bag, so we cracked open a few beers and had a laugh. And one of them, his name was Sean Healan. Joe knows him well. So, you know, we had the game, and we performed well, and we had a great night down there and the whole lot. And then me and Sean had intermittent contact over the years, following years. I went back to Ireland in 2010. I had a pub in Germany. I closed it down in 2010, opened up a pub in Ireland 10 through 14, 10, 11, 12. It was going okay. It was going well. So in around the end of 13, I was struggling big time. I was ready to pull the plug and just get out of the pub game altogether. I was so disillusioned with it. But I started looking at, okay, do you know what? Why not just move to Liverpool and you know, get a manager's job? Or I'd even thought about doing something else and just get a season ticket and go to the game. Well, these thoughts were going on in my head. And then out of the blue, about maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, I think it was beginning of January or December, it was a Boxing Day game that Sean had been over to it would be Christmas 13, right? And he sent me a WhatsApp picture of Winslow and its scaffolding outside. And the number was on it. It would be Frank Bird's number, the scaffolder who was involved with the business. And look, I just took it and I looked at it and I called him and the rest is history. But if I had never met Sean, if I'd never met Sean on the train that day, I wouldn't have got that photograph and I wouldn't be in the Winslow today. I firmly believe that.
What a wonderful story. And you know, it shows the whole, this is the reach of Everton. This is the global reach of Everton. There's you running a bar in Germany, bumping into some Irish toffees on a train, going to Nuremberg, and then ending up where you end up. And that's a fabulous story, Dave. I didn't know that. It's wonderful. I mean, I love the Winslow. I've always been there with my dad before the game, and I mean, I like the Brick as well, and other pubs are available, fans, of course, we know that. But the Winslow is a really special place to me, and you always manage to have, it's a friendly atmosphere in there, and away supporters can go in as well. Is that still the case? I've seen all kinds of away supporters in there. How do you manage to keep it, you know, quite so... let's call it amicable and yet still boisterous. And, you know, you're 10 paces away from the ground. How do you manage to keep that atmosphere like it is, Dave?
I think from day one, I'm a bit of a, I suppose, of a hard nut, sort of disciplinarian, I guess, to a degree, what I do. But, you know, when I arrived there, I heard the stories about what it was like in the past. You know what I mean? Mm. And I just basically said, look, it is what it is. It's a clean slate for me. I'm going to do things the way I've always done them, and just see how that works. And that's basically running a tight shop, you know. So basically, we from the word go. I mean, you saw it. You were probably there. We opened one bar.
Yes.
Then opened the other, and it renovated. It was clean. It was tidy. And I think when you have that, people are going to come in and respect it. You know what I mean? It's not a dive. They're not going to come in and start, you know, mucking about in the place. So we never allowed any messing from the start. And to be honest, we never had any. You know, it was seamless. It was very easy. It was never been as much as an argument there. Okay, there was one or two, I think, over 6 years, but nothing to talk about, you know. As regards away fans, we get pockets of away fans, but we never get the large groups. You know, I think the police don't allow them down Goodison Road anyway, mainly. But we get pockets, and it tends to be couples and families with kids and the older generation, and are always welcome, you know, always mindful and respectful of Everton and the business, you know.
Well, I think you do a fantastic job, so thank you for lots of supporters who use that pre and post match. The artwork makes a massive difference as well. Toffee Art gave you a lot of stuff.
Thomas Regan has done a wonderful job with all his work there. You know, well, obviously we all know the connection between the Winslow and Goodison. Of course, it predates Goodison by 6 years. So since the first ball was kicked in 1892 against Bolton, I believe, Evertonians have been drinking in the Winslow. The only time they didn't drink in there was when the league was suspended for the war and the couple of years that it was closed in 2010, 11 and 12 or whatever it was. You know what I mean? So it's a ritual. It's a ritual for so many generations, you know. So I tell you a story I heard from an old guy who's... God, he must be 87 now. And he was telling me when he was a kid that he was in, the same day he was in, he was with his son. He was just four generations. It was his son, his grandson, and his great-grandson. And they're all there together in the pub. And he was telling me a story how one day when he was a kid, not much older than his great-grandson, he was stood at the bar and he looked to his right and he saw two pairs of stocking feet, blue and white socks. Yes. And it was half time, and it was a couple of the players that came over for a swift half.
I love it.
This would be in the 20s or the 30s, I'm not sure, you know, but, you know, way back.
But it's not dissimilar from Johan Cruyff having a cigarette at half time in the Barcelona dressing room, you know?
Yeah.
And listen, what's going to happen? What have the club said to you about the move to Bramley Moor? What will happen? Is the Winslow, will you go, not obviously you're not going to take the Winslow to Bramley Moor, but will you open something over there, or is the Winslow incorporated in the redevelopment of Goodison?
I'll be honest, I would love to say right now, yes, we'll be involved. I can't say that. We'd love to be. Obviously, like you say, we can't ship it bricks and mortar, but we can. We brand it, and we can take the concept with us. Okay, so yeah, we'd like to be involved down there. You know, I mean, I have spoken to Denise about it. We would love to have a presence, in the sense that, you know, all we need is a little bit of space, you know, whatever, and we can put a unit in. We will kit it out. We'll obviously rent that space from the club. It's just to keep that connection going, that connection which has been there since 1892, you know, so we can, that ritual that the fans, so many Evertonians have, of going to the Windsor before and after a game, you know, it would be just, you know, it's my dream to do so, you know, and I'm trying to manifest it, but, you know, I have to also be mindful of the fact it may not happen, you know, but we definitely have the fans on our side. I mean, I've spoken to so many fans about this over the last 2-3 years, and so many fans have said it to me, are we going to be there? Are we going to be there? Are we going to be there? So what we are going to do this year is we're going to do an online petition, online poll, to see where that gets us, you know. We would love to be down there, yeah. Sorry, Roger, I didn't
interrupt you. Go for it.
If I could just add to that, because, you know, we all go to these new stadiums, you know, and let's hope Bramley Moor will be slightly different. But for the amenities side of it, you know, all the facilities, the bars, and they tend to be soulless and lifeless and all about the bottom line. You know, everything is farmed out to these massive multinational companies, and every time you go there, it's untrained minimum wage kids, and there's no feel, there's no, definitely no traditional pub feel, you know, it loses its character, it loses everything. So I would like to bring that to Bramley Moor, do what we do at the Winslow and better it down there, you know. That's the thing which a lot of these stadiums are missing, I believe. You know, you go to a rock concert, you go to any of these big stadiums, you're just a number in there, you know, of all these little bars in there. But I would like to have a traditional bar, traditional pub, the Winslow at Bramley Moor.
All right, here I would echo that. Good luck, and I'm sure people will support it. Thanks for coming on, Davey. If I can just come to you before we close this section, tell me where you think we're going to end up, and this season, but what your hopes are for next season, please, if you could, in a nutshell.
Thanks. I think the rest of the season will be just a watching brief for Ancelotti to see who he's going to keep and who he's going to jettison out of the club. And at the moment, I think there's maybe 5-6 that are on the keep list. Calvert-Lewin, Hoge, Richarlison, Mina, Pickford, and then you obviously have the likes of Coleman, Baines, yeah, whatever. But I think the rest of them are literally just playing for their places for next year, literally.
And what would be par for next season? Let's write this one off. We finish 9th or 10th or wherever. Where do you expect us to be this time next year under Carlo Ancelotti? League position and cup success or not?
I think we're going to. This is going to be the same thing for the last 10 years. Well, it's going to be a huge, huge summer for Everton Football Club in the transfer market. Yeah. Now, whether financial fair play will come into the equation, if we can spend what we want to, I think we may need to get rid of maybe 5-6 players to go and get 3 or 4 top players that will make the club progress. Because if we just 1 or 2 apart over the last few years, we've just bought mediocre players for huge money, and they just have not worked. We haven't progressed at all. We're still in around that 7th, 8th, 9th. Come to October, November, we're looking at relegation. We're looking at the bottom of the table rather than looking upwards. So I was said the other day, I think it was Roy Keane said it, this is Ancelotti's toughest job as a manager, and I think it's very true, because we just need that injection of class in the, from top to bottom.
Agreed.
As some said, we need a spine keeper, centre half, midfielder, striker, who are all top, top class, and build around them. And just at the moment, we just have not got that at all.
We haven't. Gentlemen, thank you for your time this afternoon. I'll be talking with Phil from Cork Evertonians in a very short while to complete this Irish special. Thank you both for your time. Dave, great stories about the Winslow. And Joe, what's great stories about the Irish Toffees. Thanks a lot, guys, and I'll see
you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Roger. See you, Joe.
Okay, so now I'm joined as the final guest for this Irish special. I'm joined all the way from Cork. It's the evening in Cork, and I can tell you that this gentleman has a European Cup Winners' Cup final shirt on, 1985 vintage. It's a very good evening. Welcome to the Blue Half podcast to Philip Heafy. Hiya, Philip. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, we're good. Thank you, Philip. I'd like to start off like I did with Joe and Dave. Tell me, why on earth a man from County Cork is an Everton supporter? How did the bug bite you?
I suppose back in the 80s when I started supporting Everton, there wasn't much Irish football, so there was quite a number of Irish players linked to it and playing for Everton, Kevin Sheedy notably. Also in 84, I was in two minds between, I hate to say it, but two minds between Manchester United and Everton. And I think the Everton bug just caught me. It's like they say, you know, once you go Everton, you don't go back. And I didn't for the last 35 years. It's been hectic. It's been emotional. It's been frustrating. It's been memorable. It's been sad. I've met some fantastic friends and acquaintances through Everton, and because I'm an Everton supporter. And I think looking back, okay, we've had one trophy, I suppose, we have had a trophy in the 90s, and that was it. But I wouldn't change it for the world.
So lovely to hear for you to talk so clearly about that, about the passion. So you don't regret when you were tossing up between Man United and Everton that you jumped the wrong way?
No, definitely not. You know, trophies aren't everything. It's about passion. It's about history. It's about pride. There's very, very few players that have been at the Everton club for, you know, longer than a season that haven't played for pride. Now, I know that at times there you question their pride, but you know, you hear it away too often that it's the club that they sign for. It's not the wages, it's not the money, it's the pride, it's the Everton bug. And you know, for me, that's what it is. It's a bug. It's, you know, kind of it's hard to explain. I've tried to explain it in the past, but it's, you know, Everton fans get it, other fans don't.
It's fair enough. But we talked earlier with Joe and Dave about how you know, we can remember players, we've got favourite players. For me, it would always be Big Neville, and there's a lovely picture which people will see as the cover photo for this pod of when Big Nev came over and saw you guys in Cork. And we can talk about Timmy Cahill. We can talk about Tim Howard. We can talk about Philip Neville, for goodness sake. We can talk about players who've played with pride because it matters, because they get the club. And unfortunately, we seem to have a group of players at the moment, or a number of players within the group, who I don't think get Everton. And they showed again, and arguably for the first time under Carlo, if you take the FA Cup tie away at Anfield out of the equation, they showed on Sunday at least half of that team that pretended to play for Everton on Sunday that they don't get the club. What was your reaction to the game on Sunday, Philip?
Yeah, bitterly disappointing, because I felt for the first time in a long time that we were going into we say, you know, virtually the top six away from home. And I genuinely thought we had a great chance. I bitterly disappointed. A number of players have let themselves down. Everyone's entitled, or every player is entitled to a bad game. Unfortunately, one or two of the players are after having their fifth or sixth bad game of this season. But I think that there's positives there as well. And where I'm seeing the positives from is that Carlo has given them a chance to show themselves. And the positive for me is that they're not showing they're good enough. So I think that Carlo will heave them out at the end of the season. And for me, that's a positive.
Well, let's hope so, because we've talked almost for the last three or four summers that, you know, oh, we need a good clear out. We've got to get rid of the deadwood. And the problem is, we've bought more bloody deadwood. You know, if you look at what was bought in at the start of the season, you look at Jibril Sidibe, you look at Kabamin, has barely kicked a ball. You look at Alex Iwobi, not really improved much. You look at Fabian Delf, waste of space. Really a lot of pressure this summer, as much on Marcel Brands as anyone. What do you make of Marcel's contribution so far? It's a bit hit and miss.
Yeah, I would have said exactly the same. It's definitely, it's certainly not an all in one direction. It has been hit and miss, but like, you have to look at some of the bigger players, you know, as well. Like, I don't know, was he involved in directly in bringing in Richarlison? But Richarlison is young and good. Kane is young and good. You know, Calvin Lewin is young and good. So, okay, while I would say that maybe 80% of the supporters were probably calling for DCL's head last season to be shipped on or shipped out, you know, Carlo has improved him to no end.
He absolutely has. But I'll tell you something that worries me more than anything about that Chelsea performance. There's no doubt Carlo has achieved things. He's improved players. He's brought a greater belief, although it evaporated at the bridge. My concern was that the only player who was fighting hard for the entire game and who seemed to care and wanted to make an impression, arguably Pickford accepted for once, was Richarlison. And he wants and deserves and is good enough to play Champions League football. And if he looks around that dressing room and sees a bunch of cowards who aren't bothered and just want to take the money, how soon till he is off? And might we even need to sell him to make up for losses on some other people that we need to get rid of? And that's a big worry, because he's a key player for us.
I think the Carlo factor will keep him at the club. I think that Carlo didn't get huge time to bring in his own players in, January. I think that he will get the time and the backing for the summer. And I think that he will be, I think that Everton need to back him big time financially. I think that if they need to take a hit on, you know, one or two of the, in inverted commas, one or two of the senior players as well. They need to get him out. Sigurdsson, as we kind of mentioned, I feel needs to go. He's had enough time at the club and he hasn't performed.
Fair enough. Let's, because this is an Irish special, tell us a little bit. We spoke with Joe earlier, Joe O'Reilly, about the Irish Toffees and the history behind that. You've got a really strong group over there in Cork. Tell us about that and tell us how much interaction you have with the club. I mentioned that Big Nev was over to see you last year, I think.
Yeah. Neville was over. He came to Crosshaven to see us, organised by another member of the group, Cian. He came over. It was a great night. There was a kind of Q&A session beforehand for the sports club members, and then it was kind of out into the open bar for a kind of a more kind of general Q&A.
How many members have you got out there, Philip?
The exact membership, I'm not 100% sure, because the club over the past year or two has, it hasn't been fully, we say, functional. We meet for every live game in the Moncton Bar and Turner's Cross. But like, we've had discussions the kind of the last couple of weeks that we're gonna drive on the kind of the recruitment, we say, of supporters from here on in, because, you know, it was kind of a bit surprising to me there quite recently, where I met a supporter from Cork who didn't know that there was a Cork supporters club.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Like Cork isn't a huge place. So from that, we've kind of said it, and that's why we have the Twitter page and the Facebook page set up and so on, and just to kind of recruit every Everton supporter and the undecided supporters as well that are half thinking about it. We'll transfer them over to the Everton Magic as well.
Good for you. Am I right in thinking that Cork is Roy Keane's hometown?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And yeah. Does that mean that the majority of the, you know, the English supporting, English football supporting population of Cork is Man United?
It's very diverse. It's, you know, you'd, you know, if you were going out for a drink to watch a game, obviously not just the Everton ones, but if you were going out, like you could see every club being supported. Like in my own local bar, there's a Norwich fan, a Newcastle fan working behind the bar.
Right.
You know, I have friends that are, I have one friend that's a Sheffield Wednesday fan. So,
okay, you know, so it's quite diverse. There,
yeah, sometimes there, when I think I'm bad, I think of him.
Listen, how many games do you get to a season, and what's a trip to Goodison look like for you guys?
Generally, the trip to Goodison you could do in one day, depending on the game time. Fly yeah. out in the morning, fly back at night. There's direct flights from Cork. You can also fly out from Dublin. So depending on how much travel you want to do, you can get out and back the same day.
Yeah. And does the supporters club organise that? Do you get match tickets from Everton? How do you get your match?
There's match tickets available, but again, the we are affiliated directly with Goodison Park, so there are tickets available. For when I go over, it's a kind of a 3-day turnaround for me. Like, I might decide on a Thursday that I'm going to a game on a Saturday. So by that, the tickets are already have to be allocated from the sports club. So,
okay, cool. And a match day for you? Where do you go? Where do you go pre-match? Where do you go post-match in Liverpool?
You know, if I'm going over to, like, most times I'm going over, it's the one day. So like, I kind of go to the ground, soak up the atmosphere, call in to the store afterwards, and then head for the airport, because, you know, if I fell into company in one of the bars, I may not get home and the kids might miss me, you know.
Okay, now that's good. Very, very responsible of you. Yeah. Listen, how easy is it to get hold of Everton stuff in Cork, in the shops and stuff?
Very difficult. Very, very difficult. Now there are there's actually one person there that I'm after getting contact with, who's an Everton fan there, and he actually designs polo shirts and jackets and all that. I have a lot of the stuff going on to my Twitter page tomorrow, just to see, are people interested. So it will get easier, but for the official merchandise, extremely difficult. You have to go direct to Everton.
It's really disappointing, and presumably in Cork, in the city centre, you can pick up all kinds of horrible shirts.
Probably big time. Yeah. And you see them all out in the windows now and all that, like, and you're kind of walking past, and, you know, there's one or two stores does actually, our neighbour stores are after opening in the city centre. And since it opened last October, I've refused to walk down that street. So, you know.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, good. All credit to you for standing by that, but it's still pretty pathetic from the football club that merchandise, you know, whether it's Cork, whether it's Sydney. I've spoken to people from Sydney. I've spoken to people from Toronto, spoken to people from Dublin. I'll be speaking to people from Norway and Finland and Madrid. You know, all of these people have the belief, have the blue blood in them. And the fact that they can't get hold of the merchandise is nothing short of pathetic, really, isn't it?
Yeah, like I thought that there was a couple of seasons ago, I thought there was supposed to be some deal done with JD Sports, and that never materialized. I don't know, did it materialize in England or not, but it certainly did materialize in Ireland. Mm. You know, that they were supposed to be, I think, a part of this kit bag thing, and that never materialized, which is disappointing, because whatever about the price of the jerseys, price of the jerseys are standard, but it's the postage to get them sent is the killer. It can be 15 or 18 euros on a jersey. So
that's nonsense. Okay, listen, Philip, just to close, give me where you'd like us to finish this year and where you think we'll be in 12 months' time under Carlo Fantastico.
I'd like to see us finishing in Europe. Some people are saying, don't want Europe this season. I think that Europe will help us to entice players that may be on the edge to come and join us. The players that we want. I think that we deserve it. While we've had a horrible start to the season, I think that since the three games or the four games that Duncan had and since Carlo came in, we have played better. We've played more attractive football. So I think that we deserve it. And when I say we, I mean we as fans deserve it.
Yeah. I'm not sure some players deserve it, but the fans,
yeah.
If ever a group of fans deserved something after, yeah, you know, 25 years of trophyless football, yeah, then it's the Everton fans, and yeah, particularly those overseas. Carry on, Philip.
And I think 12 months' time, I'd be confident that we'd be, if not, we'd be certainly fighting for the top six.
Okay. All right. Listen, and one signing you'd like us to make in the summer? Give me one name.
There's so many. There's so many there. I just hope any player that comes in is playing for the club and not the wages.
Yeah, that's what we need. You know, it's funny, isn't it? We look at somebody like Tom Davis and we compare him to somebody like Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
You know, that's the player that we need. Someone who's going to play with some heart and some passion.
It's passion. That's what we need. We need passion. We need Tim Cahill, we need Thomas Gravison and Lee Carsley, we need, you know, a Dave Watson in the back line. You know, we need someone that has the club on their sleeve. I think we need 10 other Richarlison.
We need a leader. I think over and above anything else, we need a leader, because we've been rudderless on the pitch for some considerable time.
Yeah.
Philip, thank you ever so much for giving
us time. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. We're going to end. It's an Irish special. We're going to end with a piece of music, which hopefully people will relate to. It's an Irish special. This is Sinead O'Connor with a song, allegedly, that she wrote about Everton. Make your own mind up. Thanks a lot, Phil.
Cheers. Thanks. Planted, mother.